Oh my goodness, golly. I love that Indian music. There's a wise man who said, you are what you eat. Wavy Gravy says, you are what you don't shit. Think about it. Actually, thinking gets in the way of thought. That's something I firmly believe. Tonight I'm going to be using the Stein's cake makeup, Clown White. Yeah, Stein's. Stein's is good. The thing about this stuff is you just dip your sponge in water and the white stuff goes on and it dries flat. Now, most folks, when they start, I'm going to be a clown, and they go into the makeup store, they say, give me a tube of that stuff. And it's something like toothpaste and whitewash that they mush all over their face. It's called Clown White. And especially you moms and dads that rig your kids up like clowns, and they get this stuff on their face, eventually it gets all over everything in the house. So you say, well, that was a unique experience, but let's don't do it again, Madge. You know? But if you run into this stuff, it dries flat. I learned all kinds of tricks being a clown in the last... how long have I been a clown? Seven, 8 years. Before that, I was a fool. And even on this tour, I appear as nobody's fool in the Nobody for President campaign. Let's hear it one time for Nobody. It used to be, in the ancient times, the church would boogie, and they would elect a fool pope. And during that time, in Latin, on the money, it was written, the number of fools is infinite. For those of you that are taking notes. But I was enamored by the fool in the tarot. As he's going to walk off the cliff, a dog is nipping at his heels, and the sun and moon are nibbling at his assorted shoulders. Yet the fool never really walks off the cliff because the fool is pure and the cliff keeps growing new cliff. See, and I wasn't so pure and I fell on my ass a lot. Mostly nightsticks and rifle butts from the National Guard in the turbulent 60s, which actually ended in the mid-70s and began in the mid-60s, but... You know, what's time? I got to go to Jamaica with the Grateful Dead for the World Music Festival, and I learned from the Rastafarians, there is no death, time, or processed food. Now, I always knew there was no death. That's the last thing Lenny Bruce said to me. And he gave me a yarmulke that I could wear inside this hat that used to belong to Tom Mix, so I could take it off and say, howdy, Goyim. And I just thought of something extremely weird, is the address inside the yarmulke is the place where Lenny was cremated. But anyhow, there is no death. Death is Patrick Henry's second choice. And, of course, nature's way of telling us to slow down. As cocaine is nature's way of telling us to spend money. And a plague on our houses makes the nicest people I know turn nasty after a while. I think cocaine sucks. However, limitation on limitation. You know, if I'm... in the trenches somewhere, and I got to make a fast move. I'm going to use, you know, I'll take a little toot as a tool. You know, I'm not a fanatic. In fact, my mother wanted to know what that giant spoon was on the screen just before I announced breakfast in bed. What we have in mind is breakfast in bed for $500,000. I said, oh, it's just a little something to clear my head. And I didn't even know it was coming at me, you know, and I even forgot about it till I saw the rushes of the Woodstock movie, and there was this 30-foot Coke spoon. The acid's in the oranges, that's what I tell everybody. Stay. Okay, we got the white stuff on. Now we're going to go for the colored stuff. I didn't know I was a clown 8 years ago. Like you say, I was a fool. I just finished my third spinal fusion. That was the cast that we used with money from all over the world. I had these body casts that went from my knees to my nipples, and we covered it with money from all over the world, and play money, fabulous free freak brother money, Monopoly money, all kinds of money. It was called the cast of thousands. Just roll me. And when I did it, when the docs put it on me, I stuck my stomach out a little bit extra so I could always keep a half a pound of clean reefer right next to my tummy. And the only way anybody could get to it is if I desired them to. I would suck in my stomach and they could reach in and grab it, but the police would have to saw me in half. Also, that made me the stash. And when you're in a body cast, you know, it's nice to have lots of company, so there was always people falling by. I love stashes. One of my favorite stashes, I live in Berkeley, the Athens of the West right now, and in the Oakland-Berkeley trenches is where we started out there. And they have this real heavy-duty garbage collection trip that they're very proud of. So I called them up and said that I was a student of garbology, and I wanted to know their roots, not for the eggshells and the coffee grounds, but the hard, bizarre stuff that gets picked up maybe once every 2 months. And in the garbage, I found this book called Better Golf. It was hollow. Okay? So we started to stash the reefer in the Better Golf book. So whenever anybody wanted to get stoned, they'd yell, four, and everybody would run in the room. Then somebody gave me an amazing book by Michael Murphy, who was the guy who founded Esalen, where the encounter culture gets it off. I get to teach there sometimes, too. They pay me photos of our founding fathers, and they have some good scenes there. Anyhow, he wrote this book called Golf and the Kingdom, where he takes golf into being this whole mystical, like filling the hole with the sphere, and it just gets out there. There's this, he's going to see Sri Aurobindo in India, and he runs into this golf pro named Shiva Irons, who takes him out at night and stuff, you know. So I got into this book, and I knew that I had to play a game of real golf. So I discovered all kinds of hippies play golf. I mean, I ran into Dr. John, man, out on the links, and a whole bunch of... I like to play New York golf. I have this giant, huge golf ball in this weird, funny club, and I just start at the east side and go to the west side, and every time I see a hole, I go for it. Okay, so these docs had heard about me living in Berkeley and all, and getting over my spinal fusion stuff, so they came to my house and they said, how would you like to come to the Oakland Children's Hospital and cheer up the kids? And I thought that would be just the thing that I needed to do to get out of my funky situation, is to move into a situation where somebody is worse off than I am and help them out. So I dove for it. And my way out the door, somebody handed me a red rubber nose. And that's where it all started, you understand. I don't wear a red rubber nose anymore. I used to wear them all the time. I used to put Tiger Balm inside my red rubber nose, and I really recommend that. You just want to keep those channels clear, a little tiger bomb in your nose, man. No, not up the nostrils, you just smear it on the rubber. But I was busted in 1978 was my first Diablo Canyon nuclear reactor arrest. And I was in my clown stuff with these big shoes that this clown from Ringling Brothers gave me. He was retiring and he wanted his feet to go on walking, so he gave me his big shoes. And so eventually in the hospitals, I began to acquire the patina of a clown. And then one day I had to go to a political demonstration, and I didn't have time to take my makeup off, and the police didn't want to hit me anymore. Clowns are safe. You don't hear some rednecks get together and say, "Hey, let's go pummel a couple clowns." I once had the pleasure of buying out every red rubber nose in Kansas and Missouri in the 1976 Republican convention there in Kansas, putting them on the entire under-the-counter culture and circumnavigating the Republicans. And the police were at a standstill because there was all this color TV and these clowns. And could you imagine them clubbing the clowns and the color TV? "Mommy, why are they hitting the clown?" In fact, at the end of these actions, I usually used to give my red rubber nose to the policeman. Lenny used to say there's... Lenny Bruce used to be my manager in the ancient times. He used to tell me there was pigs, there was police, cops, and peace officers. And whoever got my award for the peace officer, the action, I always gave him my nose. Well, have we landed? That won't be for long. Hey, I want to get real high with you all tonight on many, many levels. I'm into it. I'm deep into it. Okay, so... Right, the reason I don't wear my nose anymore is when I got arrested that time at Diablo Canyon in my clown suit, they chased me down into a culvert. And they had our affinity group down there, which is called the Mutant Sponges. I'm a mutant sponge. And, I mean, they had the culvert ringed, or the ravine, rather, ringed with the police, with the plastic things down in front of their face, and the dogs on the leashes and on their little PA. "You're under arrest." And we said, okay, and everybody started climbing out. I mean, we could go limp down the bottom of the ravine, but it was wet and funky. And so we figured, you know, we did our thing. We'd just go get captured now and go to jail and check that out. Except every time I would try and walk up the sides of the ravine in these shoes, I would slide back down again. Now, I grew up in Connecticut. I used to ski a lot. I tried the herringbone. It didn't work. I tried all the little things that I could think of. Finally, they threw down a rope. And they hauled me up. Put on those plastic handcuffs that we've all learned at these actions to bring a nail clipper along. So while you're in the bus going to jail, you just take them off. I mean, I don't know if you do that out here, but... That's what we do there. We just... Well, anyhow, they put on my handcuffs, they took off my rubber nose and my rainbow wig, which I used to match my rainbow teeth. Most people, only little kids see my teeth because they're looking at me. "He's got colored teeth." This dentist that worked on Neil Cassidy had made the American flag for Kesey. He heard me say offhand that the only flag I'd ever salute was a rainbow. So he secretly stuck one in my mouth, and I've been chomping with it ever since. I can't get enough of those rainbows. So anyhow, there I am, handcuffed, my rubber nose off, and they're shooting my mug shot. Then he puts my wig back on and puts my nose on with the nostrils pointing up. I said, what if it rains? So I've been using my own nose ever since. There was only about 200 of us in that action. And we all stood together in solidarity in the jail that we all got released on our own recognizance. And then some of us would do a test trial. And then we got guilty. We tried to plead the defense of necessity. In fact, at my last trial, I pleaded insanity because I told the judge it was insane to build a reactor on an earthquake fault. And he thought that was pretty funny. But the thing is that I ended up finally for my 1978 arrest just a few months ago doing some real jail time, which is much different than going in with even 200, 2,000 of your brothers and sisters, and you just set up this this university of the inside. You know, we have at Diablo last time, we had Gandhian philosophy being taught. We taught nonviolent trainers. They had juggling classes. They had massage classes, first aid classes. It was a great place to be. And at night, we did the tornado of talent. And when Jackson Brown got busted, the guards started smuggling their wives in to catch the shows. But real jail is different. And so I went, there was a bench warrant out for me, and I didn't want to wait till I had an important engagement and then let them haul me off the rostrum. So I turned myself in, and they put me in jail with these 11 muscular Latino dudes with their shirts off, their bodies greased, and blue tattoos that they had etched on their body with fountain pens. And they did not come off in the shower. And they took one look at me and they said, skin it back, bozo. I told them I had herpes in the butt and they left me alone. Now, I'm not saying that to be crude or anything like that. I'm just saying that sometime in the movement for peace, you might commit a civil disobedience and have to go to real jail. And that's just something to salt away as good sound information later on down the line. Now, one of the things that I've been going to... Oh! After they busted me as a clown and they took me into the jail in 78, the warden recognized me from the 1976 Nobody for President campaign and started screaming Nobody for President slogans at me as they loaded me off the bus, like, hey, nobody lowered my taxes, right? And he thought I was the king of the hippies or something. So he made me the liaison between him and us. Except that they didn't let us near our packs, and I had to do all my running around in these big shoes. And the floor was totally covered with crickets. Every step I took, I said, there goes Jiminy. Now, it was my original vision to storm the Lawrence Livermore Weapons Laboratory with a phalanx of Santa Clauses. Now, Kris Kringle, he was a heavy dude. He did serious slam time in Asia Minor back when it wasn't no fun at all. And so I thought, you know, that would be a good one. So at my first arrest at the Lawrence Livermore my first arrest at Diablo. My chromosomes have amnesia, you understand. It just bubbles up a little bit at a time, and I think I'm growing some new brain cells, as a matter of fact. It comes and goes like cranes over Moscow. Ooh. So what I've been doing in this Santa Claus suit. Okay, I got it. I got the story. Okay, Diablo Canyon, 1981. The mutant sponges and I are brought in on a night maneuver so the helicopters can't see us through all this forest of poison oak that wilderness hippies had hewn these tunnels and warrens that we could crawl through. And they're saying, the police are saying, they won't get within 15 miles of that place. We practically walked inside the reactor. Excuse me, is this where we go to get arrested? We sat down in the road, and I was wearing one of these green catapult jumpsuits like they use on aircraft carriers. The person that pushes the button, in the ancient times they used to shoot the jet planes with giant catapults. So the suit is called Catapult Suit, USN 1A/whatever. And it's got these beautiful padded knees for, you know, fanatic Buddhist or Catholic or something. You can just go right down. And those guys, when they push that button, they're duck or they're dead, which is a heck of a reality check. Either duck or you're dead. The sleep that rots. There's one eye. So underneath this suit, which was connected by Velcro, I had the Santa Claus suit. Now the police are making this training film. We're one of the early people being arrested. They are making a training film for other police on how to deal with anti-nuclear demonstrators. And we're their first customers. As soon as they get ready to dive on my ass, zoop goes the Velcro. I turn into Santa Claus and scream, "Lay a hand on me and you'll get nothing in your socks." I also told, you think that's nasty? I told them I had militant L's that would go for their kneecaps. Why is this mic feeding back and doing all these things? Can Mr. Soundman, is there something?
There is no
Soundman. Oh, okay. Our leader is messing with me again. Okay, nobody controls the weather, too. This was a test to see if you'd really show up. Later on during that day, these same police said to other demonstrators, "Don't fuck with us, we busted Santa Claus." But it changed their vibe towards how they carried people off. You know, once you get them to smile a little bit, it changes. You are no longer a dehumanized piece of meat that they can flail upon. You become a sentient critter just like them, and they can't hit you. They really can't. Now, lately, I've been getting arrested at the best costume I've come on yet. Better than the clown. A great definition from a clown, from the Book of the Clown by John Townsend. A clown is a poet who is also an orangutan. Lately, I've been appearing as a giant bunny. Mutant bunnies for peace. And I have this great big sign that says, "Save the humans." And around my waist on a chain, I am wearing a human foot for luck. This is true. Now, how would you like to be the macho policeman that gets seen by the other policeman hauling off a giant bunny? So what I do is I get a few photographers and I say, "You want to have some fun?" And I start walking towards the police. And they start sort of backing up or looking away. And I just cruise through them. almost at my free will until I got to almost the door. When they finally grabbed me, and it was at that moment that I whipped out my get out of jail free card. Don't leave home without it. Laminated. For some reason or other, the police really respect anything that is laminated. So I gave it to my arresting officer, who pondered it momentarily and called his sergeant. This gets really good. Sergeant called the captain. And so on down the line until finally this enormous cop came in with so much gold on his head, he looked like somebody had an ostrich had dropped on him from about 50 feet up. It is the Arabs who say the egg must break itself in order to aspire to omelethood. Anyhow, here's the king of the cops, all the rest of the cops in a ring. Looking at him, he's looking at my get-out-of-jail-free card. Finally, he clears his throat and he says, "Well, this thing is only good in Contra Costa County." Now, you had to be there, but it did change the movie for, you know, the tension and kind of stuff that can exist in those events. Laughter is like the valve on the pressure cooker. And if you're not going to laugh, you're going to end up with beans or brains on the ceiling. In fact, if you don't have a sense of humor, it just isn't funny anymore. Ooh. I know, like working with the whiteout, working with the kids in the hospital and stuff like that, working with the leukemia kids. One time I was making up this kid that had leukemia to look like a clown because he wanted to do that. And the radiation had taken out all his hair, so I just kept putting on the white. Until finally his little sister said, "We could watch some movies on the back of Billy's head." We just happen to have Godzilla queued up to show on the wall, okay? Billy says, can we? I says, "Well, okay, Billy, it's your trip, you know." So he sat down and we backed the camera up just so and started to run Godzilla. We barely got through the credits when the head administrator came through with 25 Japanese doctors on a That's a great and privileged space that I have working with those little kids. Another thing that I do is I run a children's camp in the summertime. I turn into a summer camp pretty much called Camp Win a Rainbow. We teach juggling, tightrope, trapeze, clowning arts, theater arts, juggling. I already said that. I teach improvisation. I used to teach improvisation at Columbia Pictures. At one time, Harrison Ford was a student of mine. In fact, I just saw Harry at the Rose Bowl where we did this thing called Peace Sunday. Did you all hear about that at all? Peace Sunday with Stevie Wonder and Bobby Dylan and Joan Baez and Pete Seeger and Graham Nash and Dave Crosby and Steve Stills and Muhammad Ali and... This thing just went on. You didn't even hear a thing about it. Oh, my God. Yeah, the June 6th. Yeah, that's when it was. And I had the thrill of opening the thing up with 1,000 Southern California school kids made up like clowns. And I got this grower from Northern California to spring for 1,000 kazoos. And waiting in the tunnel to go on at the Rose Bowl, we are rehearsing on the kazoos in the tunnel.
Give Peace a Chance. One of the most amazing musical moments of my entire life. Man, it's all those kazoos in that tunnel. Then we marched the kids in right on cue, and I said to Tommy Campbell, who also produced the No Nukes thing at the Garden, I said, "Well, Tom, what do you want me to do next?" He says, "Wavy, you're in charge of lost kids." And that was fun, too. And I got to make some announcements there. But my biggest thrill, in between kids' camps, and my kids' camps I call Survival in the 21st Century, How to Duck with a Sense of Humor. And we're doing teepees on our own land up in Laytonville now. We have a bunch of Native American instructors with us. And that's kind of neat. Jackson is up right now in Sioux Country. It's real cold up there, and some of y'all might want to check into that. It's been kind of called a disaster area, and he collected lots of canned food and blankets and stuff, and him and a wonderful Native American radical poet named John Trudell. If you ever get a chance to get John Trudell to this school, you jump at it, because, I mean, he is a lightning bolt and an eagle feather and a cream puff all at once. He's got just a sweet, soft heart, but he's so many wonderful people in the world, you know? Boy, I love Lord Buckley, who is one of my gurus. He says, "Ah, the flowers, yes, the flowers of the garden, but the people are the true flowers, and it has been a pleasure to have momentarily strolled in your garden." And then he dropped his body. The first public event that I was ever involved with was called the Lord Richard Buckley Memorial Sunset. And that was in Southern California. We weren't yet living on the hog farm, which is this mountaintop that we were given rent-free if we would slop 40 hogs. I had just retired from the improvisational theater called The Committee that I used to work at. Gave away all that I read in time of emergency, that all the different colored races were supposed to gather together, and they said that at Hood Villa, in the center of the universe there in Arabi, they said, nobody did it. Mess it with me again, nobody. They said, "You're a little early, but you can hang out." So I hung out there a little bit. Then I went back and I started living in L.A. trying to figure out what it was. Suddenly I didn't have a Packard car and a condominium, and I was sort of living it one breath at a time, sharing a room with Timmy Harden, as I recollect, and selling reefer to the stars in decorator bags with little moon soldiers inside, like Cracker Jack. Yeah, you want to touch the Velcro back there? Yeah, that'd be swell. Yeah, there's only one place there. Okay, then we go to the big shoes. We're almost there, kids.
Okay, so for this sunset, I had scored Moonfire Mountain, which is owned by this guy, Louis Beach Marvin III, the heir to S&H Green Stamps and notorious international sheepstupper. He even had a big cow that followed him everywhere. In his Cadillac, even. I did a demo once for him in L.A. He's always letting me use his mountaintop to entertain people, and it looked like Sugarloaf in Rio, a real beautiful place. So he asked me to do this vegetable protest for him, and I said, okay. And he loaded the cow in the back of his Cadillac, you know, and I was in another car, and we're pulling down Wilshire Boulevard, and I see that the cow and the Cadillac have been pulled over. And it seems that somebody had just rustled some cows from someplace in Beverly Hills. I say, "Well, where do you see the other Cadillacs? They're coming with you." I couldn't believe it. It was so silly. Louis owns an island off Colombia where he has one of every female animal. A lot of strange people in the world.
One time at this thing in Village Gate, just this quick story about Louis Sheep. I was in my all-star cast. That was my first body cast. It was blue like this with stars on it. And they brought me into the Village Gate in a stretcher. And Jimi Hendrix was playing, and Johnny Winter, and a whole bunch of folks were appearing. And Allen Ginsberg was on the stage at the time. So they had to lay me down on the floor in the lobby while they were waiting for a break so they could move me up to the stage so I could do my number. And I began to doze because, I was there for a while. But they could get me in and out of the window of the bus in a stretcher in 3 minutes into the demonstrations. The police would blow the whistle like a hockey game, and they'd put me in this little penalty booth. Well, why don't you stay here? In D.C. especially, we had this real good working arrangement. Anyhow, I'm dozing in the floor of the Village Gate on Bleecker Street, and I hear this tap, 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 tap. And I look up, and there's these little bitty sheep going across the plastered top of my cast. And first I thought, finally, I heard about this shit. But I didn't think it was... But it was just old Louis Sheep dancing around. So there we were. We were going to do a party on his mountain. And it started to rain and pour and rain and pour. And then it rained and poured some more. Lightning and thunder, just like tonight. Hey, there's quite a light show there for a while tonight, huh? I was sort of thought we'd really get into it. I love it. Old prank strategy, anything as long as it's intense. I did this death and dying retreat with Ram Dass, and we were all in the room doing Vipassana breathing, and suddenly the wall started going, I thought, this shit is working. And it was 6.3 on the Richter scale. Everybody just sort of breathed right through it, except this one woman who got up and flew immediately to Pennsylvania. Just in time for Three Mile Island, I understand. Now, right after that, I had a field trip called Dangerous Adventures with Wavy Gravy. And we went to this place in the Joshua Tree Monument called Skull Rock, which is in the epicenter of the earthquake. And climbed it blindfolded, a couple people peeking, and it was mostly, I thought it would be adrenaline junkies like me, but it was all people who were deathly afraid of earthquakes and wanted to bite through that one. So anyhow, it's raining and raining and raining and raining, and finally I fall asleep. I don't know what to do about the Lord Richard Buckley Memorial Sunset, Next morning, I get up, go downstairs, and there's 50 people in day-glow clothes in the kitchen cooking eggs. Including Neil Cassidy and Ann Murphy. Neil had beat on... Tiny Tim was living in the back room. That's the kind of house that was in those days, right? Had beat on Tiny Tim's door at 4 in the morning demanding some grass, and Tiny was confused because Neil was standing... He was standing on a whole lawn full! He's like that, Tiny Tim. He's a descent into the cathedral of the Philco radio. He's like Billy Budd in Albatross. I remember one time, just before Cassidy died, me and Neil, I forget who else, a couple other folks, scooped up Tiny Tim from a place called The Scene, where he signed his life away to the meat managers years ago when he got big on Carson. They don't know how to book him. They have no idea what he is because he's real. They have no idea how to approach any. So he plays Rocco's Lounge in East Orange, New Jersey, and all these bomb throwers say, hey, geek, hey, sing tiptoe to the tulips. Oh, thank you, because Tiny's that sweet, But we took him with us at dawn, driving to the cloisters, Neil Cassidy at the wheel, Tiny Tim sitting next to him, and they're singing these Bing Crosby duets, into the sunrise. It was so chilling. Every now and then he'd say, oh, Mr. Cassidy, not so fast. That's all right, Tiny, we got it together right here. You want some orange? And how about So Tiny would be singing like this and peeking out, it was a lovely, lovely, beautiful moment. Tiny Tim, food for the moon.
So Tiny was in town because we were doing a midnight show called The Phantom Cabaret. And it was also a show that we did first in the Living Theater in New York City with Tiny Tim and Moondog at midnight. At exactly midnight, everybody go, bong, bong. I mean, the crew from the brig and everything, we'd all do it. If we were real stoned, we could go 15, 20 times, you know. We were shooting for 12. We remember Captain Midnight. That shows what a psychedelic relic I really am. I remember one time Tiny came off stage and he was shaking. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Mr. Rudy Valley came inside me and wouldn't leave. I've lost my Crosby power." So there we were, all these people in Deglo clothes cooking eggs. And the phone is ringing off the hook. The person you have just reached is not a working person. Please hang yourself up. But what about the sunset? What about the sunset? Finally, I couldn't cope anymore. I said, "Call off the sunset. These friends of mine are in town. They're doing this show called Can You Pass the Acid Test? And it's going to be at the Unitarian Church in the Valley. Why don't we all meet there and blow the sunset off?" Okay. A couple hours went by and, you know, the phone is ringing and we keep passing this information on. But I'm starting to feel kind of funny. And Hassler, this is a prankster who, if anything goes wrong, you yell Hassler and he comes there and he fixes it. And so he saw my uncomfortableness and he said, "Look, why don't a few of us jump in my car and drive up there?" So we drove, you know, all the way out by Malibu, Topanga, up there to this mountain. And there's this metal sign that says, "Police Dog Training Course." That keeps a lot of people from going any further, let me tell you. But if they do, they run into, like, llamas and yaks and peacocks and Louie. So anyhow, the rain is coming down, the mud is, and we're pushing our way through the mud. The instant we got to that spot where all of the Pacific was at our feet, the rain stopped, the clouds parted, and the most beautiful sunset I had ever seen in my entire life occurred. And I said, "Shit, we blew it." Lord Buckley did his thing, and we didn't even have the courtesy to show up. So ever since then, when the Hog Farm is doing a gig, or if I'm doing a gig and my name is on the poster, and you can be sure, if you see, you know, big crevasses in the ground and fire and brimstone, man, I'll be in the club doing it no matter what. That was a good lesson that we learned. This here guy is called Ektar. Many strings, never in tune, one string, sometimes I get lucky. I play the ektar. Ek in Hindu is one, tar is string. People say, "Wavy gravy, you're out of your gourd," and I show them this. My marbles are in a bag over there. This guy Shabda Khan made this for me. It's not from India. He makes the tars for Mickey Hart and Hamza Eldin. Makes beautiful tars. They're like giant tambourines, except they don't have the jinga jinga jing things on them. Just big, beautiful, expansive skin that thumps and bumps when you beat on it. I wonder if I could get everybody to kind of kick back, and if you would lay your head on the stomach of the person nearest you. So we kind of have this little, let's see how close we can get to that. And to the clown anthem. The show here, Mountain Girl said, "If we didn't turn the lights on when we did." In fact, while you're getting down in place, you might, you know, just give a little neck massage or something like that.
You know. Now, like I say, I really believe in using humor in my life. There isn't room just to ooze onto each other. Oh, first of all, has anybody got a joke?
I never tell jokes. Anybody got a good, or a riddle, a good quick riddle that I don't know?
Who's running for president?
Who's running for president? That's not a joke. I'm serious. Nobody's serious about this yet. Don't worry, you're going to get plenty of nobody.
What do you get when you pour boiling water down a rabbit hole?
Boiling water down a rabbit hole, who knows?
I got bunnies.
What?
Hot cross bunnies.
Hot cross bunnies! What's yellow and green and hangs from trees in the jungle?
Funky.
Elephant stuff!
I get these from the kids in the hospital. They seem really good. They say, what do you do when you're swallowed by an elephant?
What? You run around and around and around and around until you're all pooped out.
Then this nine-year-old stopped me cold last year. He says, wavy gravy? I said, yes. What's the sexiest part of the elephant? I said, well, I don't know. Let's see if the kid's mother was in there. I said, the trunk? He says, no. I said, I give up. He said, the foot. I said, why? If he steps on you, you're fucked. Now, my great guru in life is Harpo Marx. And I'd like to dedicate this song to him, and the chorus goes like this. We are climbing Harpo's ladder. Repeat, sing it with me. We are climbing Harpo's ladder. Just an opera hat full of yellow chickens. Just an opera hat full of yellow chickens. He was a soldier of the clowns now. Soldier. Oh, you're going to go all the way. Soldier, do you love my Groucho? Come on, sing it. Soldier, do you love my Groucho? One more time. Soldier, do you love my Groucho? Holy soldier of the clowns. Holy soldier of the clowns. Harpo's ladder, here we go. We are climbing Harpo's ladder. We are climbing Harpo's ladder. Just an opera hat. Just an opera hat full of yellow chickens. He was a soldier of the clowns. Soldier, do you love my cream pies? Everybody pick up an invisible cream pie in their hand. Feel the weight of it. Decide if it is lemon, chocolate, strawberry, coconut custard, and smush it in the face of the person nearest you. Soldier, do you love my cream pies? They are implements of the clowns. Harpo's ladder, real soft. We are climbing Harpo's ladder. We are climbing Harpo's ladder. Just an opera hat with gusto. Just an opera hat full of yellow chickens. Holy soldier of the clowns. Last verse. Soldier, do you love my whoopee? Now hold it. Now, as we sing that, as you do your, I'd like you to lift up a little bit off the ground with your rear. Okay? Let's work on the noise a little bit. That particular noise I call the funny mantra. Or one time I gave it to Peter Tosh, I said it was the Rastaberry Mon. But let me hear you all. Yeah, your whole face, that's it. Okay, I think we can do this verse now. Okay, here we go. Soldier, do you love my whoopee? Yeah, soldier, do you love my whoopee? Soldier, do you love my whoopee? He was a soldier of the clowns now. Last time, Harpo's Ladder. We are climbing Harpo's Ladder. We are climbing Harpo's Ladder. Just an opera hat full of yellow chickens. He was a soldier of the clowns. Yeah, let's hear it for you. Okay, in a few minutes, nobody is going to show up. Yeah, you might want to get a little more seated now. For those people that are involved in the transport of nobody, perhaps they had better see me up here immediately where we distribute there's the confetti over there. Now what we're going to do is, see, nobody likes a heck of a welcome when nobody arrives, especially here in Hampshire. And I guess, which door is nobody going to come in through? We'd have to probably come in from out there. So eventually we're going to have to make a little path. Nobody will come all the way around, and everybody will throw confetti at nobody. Usually we have nobody arrive. Howard will give you confetti. Usually we have nobody arrive in an open convertible and get out and speak. At all these rallies, that we think it's important that nobody speaks. And, of course, you're all aware that for the speeches, we use these wind-up plastic chatter teeth. Did I tell you the story about being arrested in Kansas City with the plastic teeth? Let me tell you that story. That's one of my favorite nobody stories of all time. Well, let's talk chronologically. Now we're segueing into the political part of the program here. Okay, first of all, when did Johnson run against Goldwater? What year was that? 64, right? Goldwater was going to come in with A-bombs and do some nasty business. So I was with an improvisational theater called The Committee then. We had made a film for Hollywood. We were hot from Broadway. We stumped up and down California for good old LBJ. Yeah. And then he got in, and with Bob McNamara, they tried to figure out how to kill more people more efficiently than anybody since Attila the Hun. So I said, whoa, maybe there's another way. So when the Yippies, 4 years later, decided to run a pig for president, I mean, I was living on a hog farm. I said, we got the pig. We kept this one pig from our humble beginnings. When we took our buses on the road, we made a film called Skidoo for Otto Preminger, where Groucho Marx played God. And with the funds of that movie, we got our first buses on the road, and we took this little black and white Pigasus. You may remember Time magazine, the Battle of Chicago. Pigasus, the first female black and white candidate for president, who later retired to her pig pen in Llano, New Mexico, and said, vote for yourself. But Pegasus was very nice and cute when she first got on the bus, but later she resembled a Davenport, and she would eat people's sleeping bags, and, it was difficult. 4 years later, we decided to get a candidate we could put in our hip pocket, so we ran a rock for president. The Zippies thought of running a rock for president. I called him up. I said, I got the rock. We had taken two buses from London to the Himalayas and stopped off at Mount Ararat. And I had a piece of Mount Ararat where allegedly the first rainbow came. And a Tibetan had carved this into the side of this rock. And at one concert with John Cipollina and Nick Gravinitis, it was jelly rolls. At every rally that we ran the rock, we would pass out rolls so you could always eat the vice president, and it was rock and roll forever, certainly. And it had calcified jelly roll. This rock was so funky, and I spaced it out in a taxi cab in New York City going to a recording session. Then, in 1976, Nobody. Wow, what a concept. Nobody. How can you lose Nobody? You can't lose Nobody. Nobody works for nothing. The price is right. Nobody's perfect. Yeah. Nobody keeps all campaign promises. Nobody goes all the way back to Aristotle. Plato. Paul Krasner says truth is silly putty. Anyhow, we decided to go for it. And we cranked up the bus. We called the bus the Nobody One. They have the Air Force One. We have the Nobody One. Okay? And we decided in 76 that it was such a hot idea that we would do it three times. Because I was into Gurdjieff then, who said if a prayer would work, you had to utter it three times. So this is our third time for Nobody. And we're really picking up the media just in the last couple of days. We were looking for a place to turn around, and we ran into a press conference for Fritz Mondale. The Secret Service once again dove on my ass, started rummaging through my red bag. They see the plastic teeth, the giant shoes. Then one guy remembered me, and he said, okay, what do you want to do? I said, I want to get as close as I can without getting hit. So, okay, right there. So we set up our little press booth for Nobody. That's Curtis Spengler. He's Nobody's campaign manager. Anyhow, after they finished with Walter, they all had to go back to the parking lot. So the entire world press walked right by us. We picked up about 17 pieces of electronic media. Also got in USA Today. Nobody's popularity is spreading, although we're saying not to vote. We think that apathy sucks. What we'd like to do is have people write in for Nobody, except you can't even get it on the fucking ballot anymore because you need, 500,000 more signatures. We had Nobody on the ballot in California, in Nevada, and in Colorado. None of the above, okay? Another way to do it is no president at all. You know, what about an official greeter Ed McMahon or Bo Derek, you know, depending on how you want to go for it, or Helen Hayes, you know. I mean, I'm no sexist or anything. Harry Belafonte, you know, somebody. But I know I want Nobody's finger on the button. I think Nobody should have that much power. So maybe we could have a civil service examination, a very elaborate civil service examination. So instead of being a millionaires club popularity contest, we could have the most qualified person. Imagine that. How about planting a small explosive device in their cerebral cortex that if they should lie, they would explode? And then we'd have to get another one. The next one probably wouldn't want to lie so much. Or what about flying on the airlines? I was reading in the airlines book about the Marquis de Concorset, who established this style of voting. It would be the first voting reform since the Australians first figured out the secret ballot for multiple candidates. This would be it. They use it right now in the Security Council and the Academy of Arts and Sciences. And how this works is, okay, you have five choices, okay? Let's say Reagan, Mondale, Jackson, Hart, and Nobody. Okay, I can vote for all five, or I can vote for everyone but Reagan. In other words, or I can only vote twice. I could vote for Jesse Jackson because I like his style, and I can vote for Mondale because I think he can stop the Reagan. And it all goes into the computer, and what we end up with is who most people can really live with instead of this mambo that we got going now. So just along with, so maybe this time I'm going to be trapped just like I was in the ancient times going for LBJ. I might toss one for Fritz because I don't want the ray gun. You know, and it disturbs me. that I'm not writing in, because I usually write in for nobody. But I still may. I don't know. I'm still rolling it around. But meanwhile, what I am rolling around on this campaign trail is the concept of positive creative anarchy. And long may it shine. Por favor. Okay, now, our leader has been spotted in the wings. We are now going to raise the vibes a little bit for nobody. But first, I forgot to tell you that story. Okay, after we circumnavigated the Republicans, I'm given a press pass by John Bryant of Appeal to Reason newspaper. I change into a three-piece suit, go up to the press booth, and start typing up press releases for the press. And giving them to the press, because they were right there. I mean, I didn't have to go anywhere or anything. So this plainclothes Kansas City heat pins me and calls the FBI and the Secret Service. They thrust me into what I call Lenny Bruce curtain call, and they start patting me down, and they feel this bulge in my pocket. Is that a gun? And they whip it out. The teeth start clicking in his hand. I said, quiet, our leader is speaking. He gave me back the teeth and he said, get out of here, you're too weird to arrest. All right, right now, right now, right now. Give me an N!
A.
Give me an O!
O.
Give me a B!
B!
Give me an O!
O!
Give me a D!
D!
Give me a Y!
Y!
Who lowered your taxes?
Nobody!
Who stopped the draft?
Nobody!
Who knows what to do with nuclear waste?
Nobody!
Who do you want to run your life?
Nobody!
Here comes nobody now! Let's hear it! Let me hear ya! Let me hear ya! Nobody! Walk towards those people. Our leader! Our leader! All right! Okay, you hold the pillow. And now, yes, speech. And now, ladies and gentlemen, in a few moments, perhaps nobody will speak. We've had a little sabotage out of here on the campaign trail. And somebody, I remember in 1976, we had leafleted a Carter crowd, and Jimmy Carter looked out at all the people and says, I think nobody has all the answers. And everybody went nuts, you know? And he said, okay. Well, what has happened is that nobody is going to speak very fast. Get ready, it's going to be very quick. Back to the factory. Let's hear it for Hanuman. Okay, let's set our leader over here. Let's set our leader over here for viewing and adoration. And what I want to do now is return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear and show you the Hog Farm Mobile Home Movie, which has been shown on the walls of gas stations in Afghanistan. It's won 3 major documentary awards. If you got to leave for any reason, Curtis over there has got the bumper stickers and the buttons. We do not get matching funds. So please support nobody. This is Wavy, over. Hi.
You know, I want to just say something.
Sure. Oh my God.
In retrospect, what I'm going to do is pass around a petition in that, just saying, asking Coca and Speakers and Artists to contribute some money to us so that we can, with that money, bring Dan Healy, who's sound man for the Grateful Dead.
Oh, Dan Healy.
Yeah.
He's a great musician in his own right, too.
We have other things we'd like to do with the money, and we want support from Coca and Speakers and Artists, so it would help if folks would sign the petition. I'll pass it around during the movie.
Passing it around during the movie might be difficult in the dark. What I suggest is set up near Curtis so that as people leave, Wouldn't that be better than doing it in the dark?
Okay, it's real important that you sign it, so please, at some point, make your way over to the petition. It would be really helpful.
Okay, now this is the plot, okay? The plot is that we're gonna show the movie. Immediately after the movie, we are going to move to the next dimension of taking the movie and turning it into life. As I said to the mirror the other morning, it's all done with people. And we're going to erupt. We're going to erupt for about a half hour, and then we'll start to get into the inner teaching of the First Church of Fun and stuff like that. But that's the game plan. So, if you duck out for a few minutes, be sure and come back before we erupt, because I don't want you to miss that. Because I guarantee that every one of you is going to get stoned. If you don't get stoned, you can kick the shit out of me and smoke it. It's a guarantee. So, are we ready to roll this movie, which was put together 4 years up to Woodstock? 5 minute break for folks who want to get a drink and pee and do that kind of stuff. And while that break is going on, I'll just sort of stand here up in the microphone and babble about some esoteric things that I don't usually talk about in my regular show, which is I don't know what I'm going to talk about anyhow. But there was a thing that I promised. No, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should let you talk. And then as soon as it gets settled back in again, then we'll get it on. Let's see. A sip of water. That's good. A sip of water. Yes. There was this Venusian, little green cat from the planet Venus, crashed his saucer in Death Valley. And he opens up the top of his saucer and the sunlight starts beating down on his glob. And He screams, ammonia, Clorox, Mr. Clean. And he's never heard from again, just a little moist spot in the sand, but that's his hang-up. I think it was Nikos Kazantzakis who said, life is a long, cold drink of water. And Milarepa, he said, I eat pebbles for penance, and when I'm hungry, I eat the void. Wavy Gravy wants to know what's for dessert. Give me some weird power on this mic, and I'll do a little weird thing here. Just really, yeah, so I can go. I live inside a violin. Ooh. I'm always real careful to pick up any cigarette ashes that fall on the floor of my violin. I love my violin. It's just that I understand they're going to tear down my violin and put up one of them ugly 12-string steel guitars. But I understand the housing department has to replace me in a similar type dwelling place.
Can you ask?
Maybe I could live in a base. That's silly, one guy living in a base. Did anybody find a hat just like this one? Yes?
You found it.
There you go. Okay, it's a match. There's a yellow hat with embroidery missing. I got to do that a lot at Woodstock. Will Weird Billy meet Elaine by the trailer? And then, of course, the classic announcement, if you have taken the green acid, you have just been poisoned. And Chipmunk made that announcement, and he has this deep, rich baritone like a melted Hershey bar being poured in your ear. You have just been poisoned. And I was standing there at the door to the trip tent, the little freak-out tent where folks would go if they were having these problems, and everybody came running up to me. I took some. Of course, because at Woodstock we had 500,000 people. There were 200 different shades of green acid. Here, I have some more. You want to take it from me? That's right. Just I had so much green acid in my left-hand side, I was listing in that direction. I remember when the first freakout wandered into the freakout tent, there were these three doctors in suits, shirts, and ties, and white coats, And me. And I was wearing that Tom Mix hat that had the yarmulke inside with a pig trying to escape out of the crown that squeaked. And I was supposed to tell these doctors what to do about crazy people. Okay. So the first freak out comes in. He's going, Miami Beach, 1944. Joyce. And this 300-pound Australian doctor starts laying on him, saying, he needs body contact.
1944. Joyce.
And there's this psychiatrist who is saying, just think of your third eye, son. I figured it was time for me to make my move. I said, excuse me, I'm going to make my move. And they kind of pushed out of the way. Miami Beach, 1944. I said, what's your name?
Joyce.
What's your name? Bob. Your name is Bob. I told him that a lot of times. He really liked it that his name was Bob. I found out his name was Bob Brown and a couple of lost hotels fell out of his eyes. Where are you from? Nutley, New Jersey. Your name is Bob Brown. You're from Nutley, New Jersey. And guess what? What? You took a little LSD, a little acid, and guess what? What? It's going to wear off. He said, oh, thank you. You know, he didn't want no body contact, no third pie. But now, when he was near normal and ready to rock, we said, hold it. You see that dude coming through the door with his toes in his nose? That was you 4 hours ago. You're the doctor. Take over. And when he's together, then he's the doctor. And you can go. So we'll see you later. And that's how a lot of the stuff works in positive creative anarchy, at least at the Woodstock thing, where we never actually, the minute we thought that we were doing it, whatever it was, we just fall on our ass in the mud. It was like Howdy Doody had more free will than I did. I could feel these invisible strings. We didn't even know that we were going to Woodstock at all. We were trying to evacuate New York City. We had been just busted in our caravan of buses in Montrose, Pennsylvania for a quarter gram of marijuana ashes. That's about, you know, like that in confetti, okay? Two guys facing, what was it, 2 to 5 years each for this. What they did is we were recommended to this farm the Living Theater stayed at to come into this little town, and they saw all these painted buses, these people. They had somehow, somebody told them about drugs, and they saw these painted buses, and they thought it was the big drop from Mexico. Do you believe that? Now, our convoy of buses were stopped every 30 miles by police for 300,000. We're stopped all the time, and we do what we call the cop show. You know, and we're cool, and we played search music for the police. They poured through the windows. They had their dogs, their uncles. This was the only bus raid they had ever had in this county, so they were into it, you know? And we weren't making matters easier by playing exciting music and helping them with searchlights, because we have one person who carries our marijuana. He's a marijuana commissioner, and it is his or her job to be invisible. This is something they picked up in the Orient. So the rest of us could be as wild as we can conceive of. And so we're doing that. And in one of the students, under one of the students' bed, they found a roach. So then they started at 4 o'clock in the morning in a blizzard, tearing apart the buses outside, cutting open bags of grains and lentils. And finally, in a dusty bag, they found a pipe some hitchhiker left, and they scraped it. And they woke up this guy in the back of the bus and says, what's this stuff? And he went, achoo! So they arrested him for destroying evidence. They scraped it again, and that's what they took these people into incarceration for. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Okay, so what we had to do was go to New York and hustle. And we were doing security for Sly and the Family Stone. We were painting lofts, tearing down lofts. And this guy shows up at the loft that we're living at, and he says, this summer, how'd you like to do this music festival in Woodstock? And I said, well, we'll be in New Mexico. That's all right. We'll fly you in an Astrojet. I said, well, okay, we could talk about this another time. You know, I just thought, you know, it's just some hippie out there floating, okay? So we end up in New Mexico with all the buses, and it's the summer solstice, and we're having a bus race, which turned out to be an electric bus race, thanks to Ken Kesey and screw-on tops. They had just invented screw-on tops, and we New Mexico rubes, we knew nothing of this. We just thought, you know, how could they put anything in the beer, man? It's already got the top on it. So anyhow, this guy shows up with a briefcase, right, at the bus race, and he's got us indeed an American Airlines Astro Jet. And there's 85 of us and 15 Indians on a plane going to, what's it called, the Cement Apple, New York City. And we think we're there for campground work to make sure that the hippies don't chop their feet off or set themselves on fire. But when we get off the plane, there's a tremendous crush of press. And this reporter comes up to me, I understand that that you're in charge of security. And I just, oh, my God. Then I said, well, do you feel secure? I said, well, of course. I said, well, it must be working then, you know. And this lady says, what are you going to use for crowd control? And I said, cream pies and seltzer bottles. And then at the Texas Pop Festival, in the middle of Janis Joplin's set, this guy comes running up to me with a case of Ready Whip, and he says, I remember you saying at Woodstock, we tried to get you to cream pies, this is all we could get. And I'm standing there with Chipmunk as we see all these bottles of Ready Whip come in, and we know that inside that Ready Whip is that funny air, you know? So we instantly started glomming on the funny air and listening to Janis, and Janis hit a note that was so amazing that my fingers slipped and I pounded about 5 pounds of whipped cream into the center of my brain and out my nostrils just as the press was lining me up for a photograph. Try that to explain that one to my mother. I had a head cold. I don't know what this... Okay, back to Woodstock. I guess my moment of truth came when I got to announce Breakfast in Bed for $500,000, and we actually tried to do it with these Dixie cups full of granola. Nobody had ever heard of granola. Only our leader was eating granola. They called it muesli, Dr. Somebody's Swiss muesli. Somehow we figured out a way to do it up in a heap. And I don't think we had really cooked the oats enough. But anyhow, it was something, okay? I mean, it wasn't a riff. And the free kitchen at Woodstock fed about 10,000 people a meal, but by the time that Life magazine arrived to take the photograph, of course there wasn't a single hog farmer there. It had volunteered, and the volunteer had passed out, and the next volunteer had come in. It was like that, like with the free stage. When we didn't know Woodstock was going to be free, we had set up a free stage. In fact, Joan Baez waited an hour and a half in the rain, because she had just cut her hair and looked a little like some Jewish dentist daughter, and nobody recognized her. And she had the style just to, you know, wait her turn until, you know, it was two from her turn when I showed up and said, what are you, she said she was just really enjoying herself because nobody knew who she was, and she was waiting in line. That lady has a lot of style, that woman. What a woman. The maid with the beautiful feet. And all these doves are always leaping out of her mouth and dashing themselves in the windshield whenever we go anywhere. I was with her 20 years ago when Martin Luther King had his dream. Did I talk about that tonight?
Not yet.
Yeah, I got to do that this summer in between camps. 20 years after, we still have a dream. Over 300,000 people. And some of the most amazing music. Coretta King got everybody, all those hundreds of thousands of people, to hold hands and reaffirm their commitment to what Martin Luther King was standing for. Stevie Wonder sang. And I even got to go on for 10 minutes. Suddenly somebody said, you, do 10 minutes. I said, wow. And what I did was remember standing there with Bobby Dylan and Joan Baez 20 years ago, and Martin Luther King was beginning to speak, and I'm saying, oh, God, it's another speech. I hope he's done quick, because Mahalia Jackson's on next. But he got about 5 seconds into the speech, and all the air began to crystallize and turn into rainbows, you understand. And I just knew that I was in the presence of something amazing. Usually the first thing that happens is all the hairs in my arm rise to rigid attention. Is this far out? Well, let me check. They were up there, right, straight up and down. And As Mahalia Jackson began to take us all on a hot ticket to heaven, I looked down at the feet of Abraham Lincoln, and there was his half-eaten piece of fried chicken. I says to Dylan, look, look at his thumb and forefinger. Look at that shortening in his beard. I think that this summer, Abraham Lincoln was eating chicken with two hands, because it was a scene and a half. It's neat. These are the good old days. I persist in saying this. That the 80s or the 60s, 20 years later, old feathers and a brand new bird. And I see it in the anti-nuclear movement, and I see it in social services, all different kinds of stuff. Woodstock. I remember Woodstock. Let's see. The plane ride back from Woodstock. I should tell you about that, because that, we knew how to behave ourselves then. But what happened at Woodstock is everybody's sitting in all that mud, electrified, and sharing their last muffin with somebody they didn't even know, and they get a print of what sharing is all about that changed their lives. That's what I think happened. I don't know. The rock and roll became a soundtrack for survival, and that's how I still look at it. Let's hear it for survival. Yeah. Hey. That's right. So anyhow, we're booked on this airplane, and Robert Frank, this master movie maker, gets on with another 300 hits of Green Acid. And we make a deal with the stewardesses that we give them the airplane back 15 minutes from Albuquerque. They seal themselves in a small room in the airplane. And we dress, put on stewardess suits and start cooking eggs. And I'm laying on the floor reading from the plane PA, Mr. Natural Takes a Vacation. And this guy comes up to me and he says, hey man, the pilot's bored and wants the sitar player in the cockpit. I says, shit, somebody's dosed the pilot. And I go charging into the cockpit, look at his eyeballs to see if they're pinned, and I speak to him right from the hip. I say, can I steer? This guy is so far out, he rolls his eyes. He says, son, you fly anywhere you want as long as you fly American. Bizarre. Bizarre. Okay, yeah, let's go that way. During one particular stuff between my two operations, when they were filling me up with all these opiates and barbiturates and steroids, I only used to sleep once every 3 days. I had lots of energy, and sometimes I was, like, for years people said, wavy gravy, you have no middle, and then I grew one. See, my bottom weight got down to 78 pounds. After I checked into this polarity center at 82 pounds, and they put me on a diet. Oh, yeah. But this is after all kinds of Western medicine. These people had a dream about my back, and they took me in, and they took care of me day and night for 2 months with this acupressure and polarity and tea, which I call hot water on bushes. And next time I'm dying, I'm going to be sure to drink some. I won't even touch Lipton's anymore. I had to drink it for 2 months, you understand. And, you know, not celestial seasonings either. It's just, you know, like heavy herb horror. Oh, God. But they got me better and better and better. And then they mailed me to Boston, to Ann Wigmore, the wheatgrass queen at the Hippocrates Health Institute, where my 65-year-old roommate, I walked in the room and he was on a slant board with wheatgrass up his ass. And he stuck wheatgrass up his ass every day for a month. And then I went to Harvard with him, and he allegedly had cancer in the prostate gland. It didn't show up on the x-ray anymore. So the next time I get cancer in my prostate gland, I'll be sure to shove some wheatgrass up my ass. But meanwhile, the bill of fare is about 15 different kinds of sprouts. And sunflower seeds and sesame seeds had been squished by a baseball bat and fermented, and then you would eat this, and the drink was wheatgrass juice, which is like somebody's freshly hosed lawn. Real strong. But if you mix it with a little beet juice, a little carrot juice, you can almost, you know, get it down. But it's real, real good stuff, except the thing is that I got recognized by some of her staff from the Woodstock movie. Say, hey, Wavy, you want to get high? I said, wiggle, wiggle. You know, I was really... So They got me stoned upstairs and then turned me on to some chocolate Haagen-Dazs ice cream. I hadn't eaten anything in a decade, right? So where can I get some more of this shit, you know? The Air One health food store. And so it goes. And I think that, the next time I'm dying, I'll be sure to dig in. Meanwhile, I just, whatever anybody sticks in front of me is pretty much okay. And that's just my funky style. But anyhow, what I wanted to talk to you about was that, so when I was running slim and trim like that, Dick Gregory said I was the fastest honky he ever met. I can't remember almost anything of that whole 5 years, except that they had me down to MC the impeachment rally against Nixon. And I was staying at the Yippie Zippy headquarters, and I made all the Yippies and Zippies knock and tell the password, which is I forgot. That's a good password, because if you forget it, you still get in. We thought that up at Woodstock when I was running the police force, but I made them all knock, and I had these 5 FBI agents that were following me around. And I would leave Bleecker and Bowery as a hunchback. Okay, and as I would cross 14th Street, I would slowly start to change a little bit through Klein's, and I'd end up in the West Side as an affluent hippie. And I got so I could lose them at will. It was real interesting moving that fast. Cassidy was about 3 minutes ahead of time. I was about 30 seconds ahead of time, tops. But that's moving pretty fast. And so they're having this anarchist convention at Hunter College. So I decide to, check out my style. So I go up to the anarchist convention, and they're showing Fritz Lang's Metropolis. And I talked all during it to see if anybody would hurt me or not. And then all the anarchists were getting ready to leave, and the yippies were going to leave. And I said, well, look at this garbage. Look at this terrible mess. Let's clean the place up. And A.J. Weberman, the Dylanologist, garbologist, says, no, they've hired some black man to do this. We don't want to take his job away from him. let's go trash McDonald's. I said, well, I'm gonna stick with the garbage, and I'll see you guys tomorrow. So they all split. And I get to meet the janitor. Now, in New York, the janitors and the cab drivers run a whole lot of the city. And I said, look, I'm giving this speech on garbology at the anarchist convention, so I need a few little things. And I got this tape deck, and on one side is the third Chinese patriarch, and on the other side is Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. And he gets me a broom and one of those things that you can push around on wheels, one of those big cans, and it said 8 on it, which means infinity. It also came from the 8th floor, all right? So I arranged the chairs in a helix to butt up against a place where there is a drinking fountain and a plug. And then I start to swing the chairs out like so. And I would put inside certain places all the glass that was, and I'd put a sign, broken glass, be careful, and all these little garbage exhibits. And then I slipped away, putting a note on top of the ash can that I had turned upside down. I wrote a note, and this may be where it first came from. Please do not touch the garbage. Love, nobody. And then I left to go to the student's house to wash up and get some many things to do my weirdnesses with. I came back carrying all this stuff. I had a sound system. I had a little inflatable tent. I was going to seize that little area where the plug and the water and that stuff was and try out my anarchy. Okay, that was the plan. I get to Hunter College and is totally surrounded by fire trucks, man, police cars. I says, what's going on? There's a bomb in the basement. At the same moment, I see the janitor and he gives me this wink. And he goes like this. And I shoot around this hedge, and he lets me in this side door into the basement, okay? So I whip into my spot where I got my little wall of chairs, and I take off all my clothes, and I have this device that some doctor invented that you take these rubber electrodes and you attach them to your back with tape, and then there are these lovely wires that run out and attach to this thing that looks like a very fancy electric razor with 2 dials on it with leatherette. And what that does is confuse the pain signal to your back. So when the bomb squad walked in, I just said, hold it right there. And they did. They left immediately. So then I started to get dressed. You know, I put on my clown stuff. I blew up my little pup tent, and they sent down a black social worker at that point. And I'm going, LSD! LSD! Right? I remember. The acids and the oranges! And so finally they sent down Judith Malina from the Living Theater. Hugh, are you all right? We're all worried about you upstairs. We're all naked. Judith Malina, the first play I ever saw in New York just about was The Connection that she directed, where the actors are junkies, and during the intermission, they hit you up for quarters and dimes that it looks like they're shooting up on stage in the second act, and suddenly I'm doing this little piece of theater, and she's on my case. There's no funny ending to this story, but it is remarkable that they even didn't take me away. I was the bomb square at the anarchist convention at Hunter College, and I've never told that story before. I just thought you'd like to hear it. Let's see. I promised somebody I'd tell them how I got my name. That might be interesting. Yeah? Okay, I'll talk about that. Then I'll talk about Seva a little bit, and we'll start to fold down. Let me think. Okay. After Woodstock, we were invited to a second festival called the Texas Pop Festival. We weren't too thrilled with the prospect as we were still, what was that, you know? Nixon was making it more and more difficult for people to get together in large numbers and boogie, to commit rock and roll. So if a promoter went in and blew it, then all the fans, all the people would suffer. And what was happening with those three-day festivals where people would fall asleep together and wake up together and fall asleep together, they'd start to work on the life support get it in tap with the music, and that's where I first started to understand some things about real positive creative anarchy, okay? So we went to Texas, and they practically threw flowers in the wake of the bus. This was after Woodstock, before Altamont. The Time magazine thing had just come out, making us some kind of American heroes. And for a moment, America backed off from wanting to crush the hippies with the hobnailed boots and say, well, maybe peace and love, what the heck? I wish they'd bathe a little bit, but it was quite beautiful. And so we're cruising in this bus into Texas, where Lewisville, Texas, was also scheduling a rodeo at the same time as the rock and roll. So these were these rowdy rednecks that had been driving through the campgrounds with ropes with whale hooks attached to their bumpers, attempting to snare freaks in sleeping bags. I remember pitching my tent between three trees. Then the first thing we did is we went to the rodeo, a whole bunch of pranksters and hog farmers and myself, and we found the rodeo clown, and we sat down, and we rolled a few, and we smoked a little bit, and we chatted, and he turned us on to the Bronco riders and the Brahma riders and all these guys, and they said, heck, let's go fix this. So we all drove back to Lake Dallas. At that point, the police weren't letting anybody in with short hair because they were afraid they were going to eat the hippies. So we just said to the police, forget it. Let's just all do it ourselves. It's all okay, you know? And they said, well, you people showed the world at Woodstock. You could police yourselves. And they kind of backed off. And all these cowboys pulled in. They started parking their cars in front of the free stage. It looked like a drive-in on Uranus or something. They're all living on the tops of their automobiles. And we had a great sound system set up. The pranksters did that. Meanwhile, the big stage was in a speedway 7 miles down the road. And the camping was just on Lake Dallas. And everything went fine till 4 a.m. The mayor wanted to talk to me, and he couldn't get in because nobody could find the key to the gate to the campground, so he was standing on the roof of his car, and we had to pull another car up, and I stood on the roof of that car, and he explained to me that the Job's daughters had freaked out about all the skinny dipping. There's hundreds of thousands of bare asses, and they'd never had one in Texas before, and so they were going to call the National Guard, I guess, to skewer them in the buttocks or something, I don't know, but it was an awesome concept. And the police officer says, well, you showed the world at Woodstock. You can police yourself. I said, okay, give me your boat. I knew he had a boat. And he went, and then he gave me the keys to his boat. And we took his lieutenant's white hat that Peter White Rabbit put on with one of those little sucker devices with a red light and a siren that spun around on his head. And I put on a Mae West, and we jumped in his boat, and we started cruising around. And I'd come to a naked person. I'd jump in with my little PA. I'd say, ahoy, Nudo. Guess what? The Job's daughters are freaked out. If you want to stay high, you got to put your pants on. Can you dig it? I guess so, man. I said, far out. Go swim over and tell that other guy and tell him to tell somebody else. And ahoy, Nudo. Blah, 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 blah. You're driving around. And sun is going down, and my throat has turned to hamburger. Ahoy, Nudo. It's just really. But I am so smug. There is not a bare ass in sight. I says, well, Peter, it looks like we done it. At that moment, here come a naked water ski with a heart on. I says, follow that son of a bitch. Three times around the lake, and we ran out of gas. It's true. laughing. So I make my way back to the free stage. I had already given a speech on the pay stage because the rock and roll fans would come into the freakout tent to sniff the incense and giggle. So I put in a good word for the chemists of Texas and made my way back to the free stage. Was totally covered with 9-foot dudes with filed teeth doing the boogaloo and playing the kunga drums. And I don't know, like a mad moth, I grabbed this microphone, I lay down on the floor, and I says, I don't know, maybe from Smokey Stover, this is wavy gravy on the floor. Please do not dance on the wavy gravy. And these guys looking down, they say, shit, there's a dude down there, man. Maybe he had a stroke or something, you know. So they're dancing around me, and Ken Babbs up on by the drums, he picks it up. He says, mumbly wumbly on mic number 3. Come in, wavy gravy on mic number 2. I says, wavy gravy on mic number 2. And the drum moved. I look down. I see this clown from the rodeo being sold a joint by a long hair for $6. Could we have all the dope on the stage? All the dope on the stage. All the dope on the stage. We start to get this mantra going. All the dope on the stage. All the dope on the stage. All the dope. After a little pile. I'll begin to grow, and it's getting bigger. All the dope in the center, a big mound of fucking reefer is there. And I said, okay, if 6 people say you roll shit good, come up and roll, otherwise we'll get to you. And the drums are going, these dudes are stripped to the waist, rolling one-handed and throwing out these joints. This big cloud of smoke went up over Texas. And at that moment, somebody pops out and says, B.B. King is here with his bus, and he's going to play for free. Could we clear the stage, please? And I was getting up kind of slow, and I feel this hand on my shoulder. And I looked up, and there was B.B. King. You wavy gravy? I says, yes, sir. He said, well, wavy gravy, we can just work around you. And he leaned me up against his amplifier. Okay. From out of this side comes Johnny Winter, and they play till sunrise, Celestial Jelly, some of the Lord's Own Jam. And it was everybody's reward for picking up the trash and putting on their pants, and a tiny tip of Texas went to heaven. Now, when I got back to Cal State, I was teaching improvisational techniques to brain-damaged kids, and I had a new group of kids, and I walked in and I said, hi, my name's Wavy Gravy, and I did my class. Professors came running in after the class, and they said, keep that name, you saved a week's orientation. It's weird on the telephone, though. I said, your name is what? I'll say gravy like the brown stuff on potatoes, and they'll giggle at that. Or I'll say W, first initial W. You say wavy gravy, and it's all over. They're like, fresh. Okay. Okay, this is where I want to go, to the bubbles. Okay. In the children's hospital, this is the secret weapon. You know, a kid's crying, and I go in, and they're kind of scared about their environment or something. I'll blow them a bubble or two. Now, after Woodstock, we took these, this movie called Medicine Ball Caravan. Do I get to be talking about that a little bit? Warner Brothers wanted to make the sequel to Woodstock, right? Right, the sequel, sure. Jaws 5, Woodstock 2. I don't know. I don't know. I love Meister Eckhart when he said only the hand that erases can write the true thing. But we know he said that, so he messed up. But anyhow, we agreed to do this movie. Warner Brothers would fix up our buses, and we could leave the movie at any time and go to a political demonstration. So that was the deal. So we're out there cruising with this movie. We end up in England at Canterbury playing a gig with Pink Floyd, and we have a band called Stone Ground with us. And so at 3:30 one morning, I stealthily left my little camp with only a couple of friends, no tape recorders, no cameras, and I beat on the doors of the little village of Bishopsbourne and screamed, "The Americans are coming! The Americans are coming!" The Americans are coming. They found out the next day. The only thing that ever happened in that town before was when George III tried to jump into his mistress's bedroom on his horse, and the horse didn't make it. And the postmistress showed me the spot they buried the horse, and that was the last thing that happened in that town till we got there. But anyhow, after the concert with the Pink Floyd, these British rock and roll promoters wanted to buy us a bus so we could drive around Western Europe and spread good vibes. And we said, no, how about a London charity? And they pouted as only the British can pout, so we said, okay, we'll take the bus, you know. But around that time, we had just seen a play by one of my gurus along with Harpo Marx, is Matt Gandy, and there was a quote of his, "If God were to appear to starving people, he would not dare to appear in any other form than food." And this was right around the Pakistani flood. And so what we decided to do was to, not that we felt we could feed the starving millions, okay? We were only feeding 10,000 people a meal at Woodstock, but we had so much media that if we were there doing it, it would embarrass the big governments to get off their ass. My God, there's hippies doing it. We better get off our ass. And so it was a tactic, okay? And so we started that drive, 70-some-odd people in two buses, a Leland and a Mon. The Mon was called Heinrich's All-Night Rainbow Watermelon Repair Shop. And the other one was the Sterling Hog, and it took us almost a year to get across. It was so cold in Turkey that the gas once froze in the tank while we were driving. This Turkish truck driver came by and said, "Not to worry," and he threw brush under the bus and set it on fire. He says, "When it thaws out, drive like hell." We had to chip our sleeping bags off the walls of the bus sometimes. You know, every morning we'd wake up, there'd be a billion noses pressed against the glass. It was like we were a saucer from Mars, truly, you know? And then we made that entire trip to have the Indo-Pakistani war break out, and we hung a left into Nepal, passing out the medical supplies and stuff to the Tibetan refugee camps along the way. We were the first American vehicle allowed on the Chinese road to Pokhara. And also in Albania, we didn't have to pay a road tax because we were a commune. I thought that was tasty of them. Well, with the food and medical supplies, we took this trek into these remote lamaseries. And I'm not a doctor, but this doc that I worked on the movie with, Larry Brilliant, he was along, he says it rhymes with stupid, he came along because the Warner Brothers gave a lot of money to free clinics. So I was walking with him, and he had the medicine, and I had the bubbles. And these kids in Nepal had never seen a bubble, you understand. And can you imagine 400 children chasing that many bubbles through a field of reefer that extends all the way to the Himalayas trying to escape to the stars and just, you know, take your breath away. And finally we got like several hundred miles from a light bulb to this very, very veneer secluded Tibetan lamasery, and all the old lamas are inside. And I'm in the courtyard blowing bubbles for this little kid named Lapsang, who has shaved his head, donned the saffron, was the lama's assistant, and could speak some English. And he was getting off on the bubbles. And I blew this one bubble, and the head lama came out and saw the bubble and fell to his knees. At this point, they invited me inside with my bubbles, okay? sat me down on this cushion, fed me some tea and sampa, which is Tibetan oatmeal with a little yak butter and some water buffalo milk. And we sucked that up, and then we all got to go for hours and hours and hours. And I got so very stoned. As I got up to leave, I handed the bubbles to the kid, and the llama snatched the bubbles away. And it was translated to me as he closed them up and put them on his altar that on high holy days they would blow one bubble for Buddha. Now, can you imagine being a photographer from National Geographic or sent to this remote lamasery because they have these skull cups and butter lamps and 500-year-old Dorje bells and mandalas so breathtaking you don't notice till you're in the developing tray back in New York, the dusty bottle of magic miracle soap bubbles. Which would cause your head to fall on the floor, man, just like that. That's that what goes ha-ha plop. It's a photographer laughing his head off. That was him. And I think it's important that we crack our brains 4 or 5 times a day. I would like to get big tortoises and I'll write Souvenir of Miami Beach on their side and let them go. I do things like that, you know, not with poison paint or anything, but just to crack somebody's brain. Because I think the train wreck of the mind is what lets the clouds run through the fontanelle. For years and years, I wandered around. I said, oh, God, I hope I don't flip out. And then I stopped and I flipped out. And now I don't have that to worry about. After you get used to it, being crazy is the most normal thing in the world. Not insane. Remember the Papoons? Papoons for president? Yeah, a few people? That was their motto, not insane. This Fire Sign Theater, really wonderful bunch of folks that I used to hang out with a lot. I certainly had the pleasure of hanging out with a lot of amazing people. I think that one of the most amazing is this doc that I told you about that made this trip with us for the free clinics, and he ended up running the American team for the eradication of smallpox in the world, which is the first disease in the history of the world to be eradicated. Let's hear it for the eradication of smallpox! Right on, right on, right on. And the woman who headed up that project, Nicole Grasset, for India and Southeast Asia, and we're looking at 2 billion house calls, okay? The woman who headed up that mambo was looking for the next thing with that kind of dedication and that kind of technology that could make a reduction in human suffering. And she called up Larry and she said, Larry, we must do something about this blindness. It seems that 80% of the people in the world that are blind are unnecessarily blind, and 80% of them can get their sight back for about $10 an eyeball. And so Larry called me up, and Larry called up Ram Dass, who last time we were in New Hampshire, he was nobody's guru. You know, he works for nobody too, you know. And all these different people from different walks of life. We have an ophthalmologist who is an ex-nun. There's positively every conceivable spiritual denomination and ethnic group involved in this organization that we have started, and it is called SEVA, S-E-V-A. It's from a Sanskrit word that means service, and it simply set up a foundation to help do what we can to alleviate human suffering. I mean, what the fuck else is there to do on the planet? When you get right down to it, you know, once you take care of yourself and your kids, you're looking out and your degree of civilization is how much further you will reach out from yourself to help somebody on the other side of the world that you'll never see and never know. And it's real interesting to be working in these ballparks, like I get to do stuff at the UN where they introduced me as Mr. Wavy Gravy, humanitarian and clown. Oh, my heart just lit up when I did that. And did some shows at Carnegie Hall. The Grateful Dead have been the house band for Saba over the years. Let's hear it for the Grateful Dead. Some of the bravest guys I know on earth, I'll tell you. And I'll be doing, in fact, at the end of this month, I'll be doing some shows with them, even on April Fool's Day. The money will be divided up from the four shows and given away to 10, 15 different charities that have sent them prospectuses and stuff like that. And they do that every year. It's called the Shotgun. So essentially what I do for Saba is I'm a fundraiser, FUND, and I go around, I get folks to do these concerts. Jackson did one for me with Graham Nash in the Santa Monica Civic. And I have a concert coming up in Toronto on June 21st. And I think that you should mark that date down. And I think that, Dork, as soon as I know that I can let you know, I'll let John know. And I understand that you guys have a pretty good hook up there on finding out. Anyhow, it's going to be for Saba, and I could also say the band is going to play. I can say that for sure. And I can say that the Canadian government will double everything that we make in Canada for Saba. So that's why we're taking that risk of going over the border, as it were. Where'd that mic stand go? Let me see. What do we got here? Yeah, let me try that. Arms getting tired. Just for a little bit. It was real funny. The LA concert, one of the things that Saba also does is work with the Women of All Red Nations, which is Lorelei Means and a bunch of folks in the Sioux and Cheyenne reservations that are working on self-help medical care apart from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, okay? So it's on the poster, Sing Out for Sight. Some of the proceeds to the Women of All Red Nations. So I get this call in L.A. from the John Birch Society. I said, what are these Women of All Red Nations? You know, it's early in the morning. I said, well, there's some lady from Albania. There's a Chinese ladies, Russians. And next thing you know, I get this summons in the mail from the Department of Licensing and Bingo. That's what it said on the stationery. Los Angeles Department of Licensing and Bingo. And I had to go down and explain that the Women of All Red Nations was... In fact, our advanced first aid trip on the reservations, and just, I was told last year, saved 70 lives on Porcupine alone. And now we're building a clinic at the Wounded Knee, too. Other things that Saba is just beginning to get involved in is world reforestation, which is... I mean, especially we noticed it by doing our work in Nepal, where we set up the mobile eye camps and stuff and are training Nepali so they will be self-sufficient in their eye care in the next three or four years. And then this can be used as a model down to the Indian subcontinent. So we're getting into reforestation, not just in Nepal. Also, we're trying to help those poor Guatemalans that have been chased by the death squads down into Mexico. There's hundreds of thousands of them. The Mexicans won't even admit they exist, so all money to them has to go kind of undercover, under the counter. But it sure is nice to have something to do, something clean like this. Because I wandered around for years doing one cause or another, you know. So now my main things are staying alive, you know, like world peace. I told the whale people, you know, I even went to Japan with 150 rock and rollers to save the whales and dolphins. And you should have seen us, me going through customs. That was the funniest thing. I had this moose that had a string and it talked. And the guy pulled the string, the moose talked to him and he said, you go on ahead. I could have had about 5 kilos of grass, man. I would have been the most popular person in the entire Japanese islands. The only reefer that got into Japan were some hippies that played junk music to whale slides, and they stuck it up their ass in a balloon. There's no reefer in Japan. I got to play an orphanage with Richie Havens in Japan. I also had a Big Mac attack on the Ginza. And I went in, I got my Big Mac, and all these lights went off, and it was the 1,000,000th hamburger. So I have this little plastic thing that with arches and Japanese writing that says I can eat hamburgers in Japan forever. I don't know if that's good or bad. So anyhow, I'm still with this pile called the Hog Farm. We run a telephone answering service called Babylon. We have some land up in Northern California that we spent 5 years looking for, that it's 100 acres flat for growing, and the rest is woods. It's got a 3-acre lake. I'm doing my kids' camp there. It's life is really getting interesting to me. It used to be a Chinese curse. May you be born in interesting times. Well, I tell my these whale people I honor, you know, the whales and all, but and I think it's important that my kid sees a whale, but I would like my kid to see his kid. And so, I mean, we all got so much juice, and like Kesey says, you want to put your juice where it'll do the most. What is that other line of his? He says, the trouble with a superhero is what to do between phone booths. My favorite line is Cassidy's. After a Dead concert, he says, boy, are my feet tired. It's a good thing I'm not a foot. And I think that that we're going to start to see more and more people are going to risk the conspiracy to commit rock and roll and outdoor music. I mean, we're slowly oozing that way. We had a neat time. The Hog Farm got to set up the outdoor way stations for Deadheads this summer, and we had the Hotel Colorado and Casa New Mexico, you know, and started to, you know, figure out different ways that we could all work together to make it a little better. Why not? Something to do. Years and years and years of driving around with this crazy buses and this pile of folks, and every now and then we'd hear about somebody, hey, that guy's got heavy vibes, or he's, you know, he knows where it's at. So we say, where are they? Let's go look at them. Let's go check them out. We even had a guru commissioner. Larry Brilliant used to be our guru commissioner when we were too busy to check out all the gurus. I mean, they were coming hot and heavy there for a while, you know. But anyhow, not just the gurus in print, but high beings that we would rub against in our travels from sea to shining sea and beyond. And then we tried to take all those where's it's at's and line them up, like if you take a candle and you stick it between a couple of mirrors and you see a whole arc of light stretching to infinity. And that's what this song is, and it kind of passed through my heart, and I'd like to share it with you now. And wouldn't it be neat if the people that you meet had shoes upon their feet and something to eat? And wouldn't it be fine now if all humankind had shelter, basic human needs, basic human deeds, doing what comes naturally down in the garden where no one is apart, deep down in the garden, the garden of your heart. That's the chorus, basic human needs. Sing it with me. Basic human needs, basic human deeds, doing what comes naturally down in the garden where no one is apart, deep down in the garden, the garden of your heart. And wouldn't it be grand if we all lent a hand so each one could stand on a free piece of land? And wouldn't it be thrilling if folks stopped their killing and started tilling the land? Basic human needs, basic human needs, basic human deeds, doing doing what comes naturally down, down in the garden where no one is apart, deep down. Deep down in the garden, you know where, the garden of your heart. Here's the bridge. Not just churches, not just steeples, gimme peoples helping peoples help yourself and work out. Till the stars begin to shout, oh, 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 thank God for something to do. Basic human needs, basic human needs, basic human deeds. Doing what comes naturally down in the garden, where no one is apart. Deep down in the garden of your heart. What a great day it would be if everyone could see, if no one was blind unnecessarily, 'cause it's hard, yes, it's hard to be blind and disable basic human needs. Basic human needs, basic human deeds, doing what comes naturally down in the garden where no one is apart. Deep down. Deep down in the garden of your heart. And wouldn't it be fun if the shine down from the sun could power everyone and uranium slept forever in the ground? Basic human needs, basic human needs, basic human deeds. Doing what comes naturally down in the garden where no one is apart. Deep down the garden of your heart. Last verse. And wouldn't it be daring if folks started sharing instead of comparing what each other was wearing? And wouldn't it be swell if people didn't sell their Mother Earth basic human needs with gusto? Basic human needs now. Basic human deeds. Doing what comes naturally down in the garden. Thank you. Okay. Okay. And now for our final little ritual here. We're going to need to make a series of concentric circles. First a circle of 05 in the center, and then a circle is close around them. This is the last part of the evening, and I want to do this really perfectly, and I think we can get more stoned. This circle within circle, with like a Sertz commercial, and Howard and John and Dwork, you want to pass everybody out a paper bag, please. Get everybody, make sure everybody gets their bag. This is the teaching I want to leave you with. Okay, wait, don't go dark until we get all the bags out and everybody gets nice and comfortable and oozy goozy. If you're looking for a bag, raise your hand. And maybe some. Here, give me some. I'll pass. Who needs bags? Who needs bags? Anybody doesn't have a bag? Okay, what I want you to do is take your bags and fold them up and sit on them for the moment. Don't squish them, though. Keep them nice and flat, because you'll be sorry if you mess them up too much. Because we're going to get into some serious magic here. A little street shamanism. Is there anybody who doesn't have... Okay, I think we have everybody covered. You folks standing up there, if you want to at least sit down and scoot in, there's plenty of room down here by me. You don't have to be jammed in there. The closer that we can get the energy, the more energy we're going to have to get. If any of you remembering or have your rememberer on, I discover I do my best work with my rememberer shut off, because then you can get real spontaneous and let the wind blow through your heart and have some creative imagination, which is just pure spirit out taking a walk. What I'm going to do here, we did, as you remember earlier in the evening, the gong bong. First thing I want to teach you is the sequel to the gong bong, and that is called the circle joke. Now, don't get crude. How the circle jerk works is we can slowly take out the lights now, if you want to do that for me. Okay, can we do that? Everybody get good and comfortable and centered. No, this is not a circle jerk. This is a circle joke. Thanks, mouth. Okay. That was just me talking to myself. Okay, now how the circle joke works is like, as I said before, as I said to the mirror the other morning, it's all done with people. If you hear a sound, you mirror that sound till anybody can lead and anybody can follow, but there's this sound that's sort of moving around. Eventually, in the middle of that, I'll kind of move it down into a ram or an om or something like that and start talking you through this space dance that we call a huna that I learned from a gentleman named Remington Stone when we were totally surrounded on our mountaintop by the John Birch Society and guns. And he came up and showed us this way to spread peace through our valley. And we'll just try that out here. And then we'll... continue on to the inner teaching of the First Church of Fun and disappear into do-do-do, evolve, revolve, and dissolve. Okay. So I'm going to put the mic down and we'll all just agree on a breath. Just...
together now, oh consciousness, when our hands come together now, feeling is light, love, and energy where our hands, oh, come together now and feel it in, the hands now, feel it in, the blood, whole consciousness in the blood now, moving from the blood, from the hands to the blood, whole consciousness in all the blood, in every molecule of the blood, whole consciousness, oh. Feel it in the skeleton. Feel it at the base of the spine and double it. Feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it moving down, down, down. Let it move down to your knees, from the base of your spine to your knees. Whole consciousness from the base of the spine to the knees, pushing down to the knees, down the knees, down the knees, down the knees, to the calves, into the calves, into the calves, into the ankles, whole consciousness in the ankles, in the ankles, in the feet, feel it in the feet now, feel it, feel it, feel it, whole consciousness in the soles of the feet, in the soles of the feet, in the soles of the feet, push it out, the soles of your feet, push it out, the soles of your feet, about 4 or 5 inches out the soles of your feet and pull it back into your soul of your feet and let it move up to your ankles, to your ankles, to your ankles, to your calves, to your calves, to your knees, hold consciousness up, up, up to the base, to the base, to the base of the spine and double it down. Feel it, in the center of the stomach now. Hold consciousness in the center of the stomach now. In the tongue chakra, feel it in the center of the stomach now. Move it up now, move it up now. To the center of the chest now, light, love, energy in the center of the chest, in the heart chakra, and double it, and double it, and double it, and double it, and double it. Ah. And feel it in your throat, feel it in your throat, hold consciousness in your throat, purify your throat. Heal your throat, heal your throat, purify your throat, push it up to the center of your head now, to the center of your head now, light, love, energy in the center of your head, and double it, and drift it out to the right side, to the right side, to the right side of the head now, and to the left side. And to the left side, and to the left side of the head now, and feel it now, and feel it now, in the center of your head, white light, in the center of your head, and quietly, quietly feel it in the center of your head, and slowly, quietly you push it up. Out the center of your head, out the crown chakra. Push it out the top of your head to mingle in a ball of light, love, and energy in the middle of the circle. Ooh, all your energy and double it, light, love, and energy and double it. And see it as peace on earth, and with the sound that permeates the center of our being, one breath in, and then launch that peace on earth. Feel the feedback like little snowflakes of electrons.